Hi, welcome to the Professionals Playbook. My name is Justin Lee, a current F-35 fighter pilot for the U.S. Air Force. My guest today is Jason Patton, a firefighter, a fighter pilot, and an ER doctor. Unsurprisingly, he's good friends with Bords Kaminsky, episode 4, The Real Life Most Interesting Man in the World. I want to thank everybody for listening to the show. It recently got picked up by a large aviation website, fightersweep.com, which is awesome. Ways to support the show are to write a review and then share the link to your favorite episode on social media. All right, here's a brief highlight from our conversation.
Trying so hard to keep this guy alive, using the most advanced and cutting edge medicine, trying to help him. And they actually gave him more blood products than anyone I have ever heard of, ever. Just because the chance of survival was so slim, it didn't matter. It was save him no matter what. I need everybody on base that is available, that has this blood type. If you're available, please come donate. All the blood is gone. They've used everything in the hospital, everything in Iraq pretty much. And you walked out the door and there were 300 or 400 people standing in a line waiting to donate.
We recorded this interview a few weeks ago. Jason, or Jay as his friends know him, was headed to Jordan to teach their doctors some of the advanced medical triage techniques that we've learned, specifically in Iraq and Afghanistan, over the last decade. Jay is also the owner of Inspire Wellness and Physical Therapy in North Carolina. He is a board-certified emergency medical physician and works in many of the emergency departments throughout the southeastern United States. He also holds a master's degree in nutrition from Auburn University. Jay is also a reserve military flight surgeon and has over a decade experience flying the F-16. He has been a combat pilot over Iraq and on the ground has cared for our wounded soldiers. In his free time, he's a firefighter and EMT. All right, without further ado, Jason Patton. So I'm going to do something a little bit different here because you've had so many cool life experiences. I want to throw out a topic and then have you kind of relate to whatever fits best in your life. So being a firefighter, a fighter pilot, a doctor, time management must be a necessary skill to be able to accomplish all those goals. So what do you do in order to make sure that you're utilizing your time effectively and efficiently?
So I started off as a firefighter and the fact was is I had too much time. It was, you know, there's so much downtime. You train so hard and there's so few fires and so few serious medical calls that when you go out there, you're happy to be doing what you're doing and make a difference. But at the same time, you go back to the station, you clean everything up and then you clean some more and then you're waiting for the next thing to happen. So that was kind of where I was sitting at 20 years ago going, all right, well, what's next? So I did a lot of education at the time. You know, I was on the computer and doing online classes and trying to figure out what the next move was. So then obviously eventually I got into pilot training and I saw that, yeah, there's no time anymore. You remember those days where you're working around the clock and, but you're loving what you're doing. You're so passionate about it and it's just the most fun you've ever had and the hardest work you've ever done. And it just turns out all right. You just work so hard that eventually you kind of get to the end of it and you're just so happy that hard work paid off and the moment's over. So to answer your question is I knew from that moment that being busy all the time, but doing something I loved and was so passionate about made everything worth it. And so I was fine with working all of the time. But that's kind of in the end, not what life's about. So as we move on to my world now, it was about time management and making sure that it wasn't just spending all of my time working. And it was easy to do when I was just flying jets every day. But now it's about prioritization. I focus so much on it. I have a list 20 things long every day I wake up. I rate that list as to what's most important today to cover and what has to be done now. I get those things done and I start working down the list and move on. So long answer to that question, but it's just complicated.
I guess I'm curious how you went from being a fighter pilot to a doctor and how you're able to, I guess, get prepared, take the tests necessary to get into school while you're a fighter pilot.
It's honestly while I was flying and I needed a day job. I was at that point off of my, or right as I'm finishing my 5 years of active duty, and I'm qualified in the jet, flying F-16s, flying Vipers. And life is good. At that point, I'm going, well, what am I going to do later in life? And early on, I had always thought, hey, you know, this pilot physician thing was a cool idea. And, but then, you know, as you kind of get on, that's two pretty big careers to handle at the same time, especially in the fighter world. But honestly, in 2005, 2006, the airlines weren't doing all that great. Everything was still recovering from 2001. And I had to pick a job. And, you know, I went back to what I knew I was passionate about from my firefighter EMT days. And I still loved medicine and I needed that day job. And so it was go to the airlines and fly. I mean, the airlines, it's not something I knew I would be passionate about. But doing medicine, I knew I would be passionate about it again, like I was with flying, or still at that point, you know, certainly still fully involved in it. But I had to make that decision. It was time, and I pulled the trigger, and I just put my nose to the grindstone. And honestly, I put that goal first and foremost, and I built little goals. I mean, it was all about steps. First was, all right, I'm going to be good at this jet. I'm going to get to the point where I know I can handle flying this jet every day. And my day job, you know, is going to be that. But on the weekends, I'm just not going to go out every day. I was going to study for the MCAT and prepare for, you know, the next mission. That's what it was about.
Do you find yourself working kind of nonstop now? Because at least from my perspective, you know, I went to school. Everything was pretty regimented there. Pilot training, super regimented. As a fighter pilot, we kind of have some leeway, but you have the 12-hour crew duty day. So, you know, when you're home, you can't really study a whole lot. Now that I've been doing this podcast, though, if I want to wake up at 3 a.m. and do a bunch of stuff, I can. So my mind's kind of always spinning on ways to grow the podcast. I know you have your own business. Is that something that's a challenge for you to kind of compartmentalize when you're working, or do you just work nonstop?
For that decade, so there was a moment there where I was flying fighters and going to medical school at the same time, and flying fighters and going to residency at the same time. That was brutal. I mean, it was just how I rectified that was I set that goal. And I said I was going to do this, and I was not going to just half, you know, both careers. It was going to be work as hard as I could and make both of them happen. But I also recognized that you can't do that forever. And so I knew as soon as I got out of residency, my goal was to throttle back and do a lot more of the life I had, you know, where in the beginning, which was work hard and play hard. And so I promised myself that I would do that. And I have. I mean, now I go 3 weeks of insanely hard work. And then I do 3 weeks on vacation, just climbing up mountains and swimming in the ocean and chilling.
Yeah, it seems like being able to know when to sprint, when to back off is important. Going to the Air Force Academy, I tried to be efficient and not work too hard, even though, you know, it's pretty busy while you're there. But I know a lot of guys, they were just pulling all-nighters all the time. And then when they got to pilot training, they were a little bit burnt out. And I felt kind of rested. I'd had 6 months between the academy and pilot training, and I was able to work really hard and get a fighter out of there. So I can find some similarity in that work hard and then either rest or play hard.
Yeah, I mean, I see it, and I see it from guys like you and just all the people I've surrounded myself with is is exactly that. It's fun to watch them, you know, all these brilliant people. You know, I'm sitting there and I'm the least amongst my friends. They're just that amazing. And when I sit around them, I see such passion for both work and what their goals are, and they're driving so hard. But at the same time, they have the exact same passion for living and relaxing and spending their free time doing the things they love to do. And so it's kind of cool to see that you know that you've got to work, but when that work is done, the people I've seen do it best are the ones that then know that their free time is their time to recharge, and they do that just as well as they do their work.
So when you're trying to set a big goal, like being a doctor, it seems like they're kind of two types of people, and it's the guy who can combine the two in that, you know, someone who works really hard and can, you know, just go left foot, right foot and keep pumping it versus the person who's kind of strategic and can see the mountain off in the distance, but oftentimes they get intimidated by that vision. How do you kind of bounce back and forth between those, I guess, two hats that you have to wear?
You know, so I'm a diehard about goal settings. It's funny, you know, I run a weight loss clinic on the side, and everything I drive is about goal setting. It is, you set that giant goal, whatever it may be, you know, pushing that thing that you know in the end is the right thing to do for you. And at the same time, you're setting so many sub goals to get there. And that's probably the same thing I do kind of with my weight loss patients is yes, you want to lose 40 pounds or whatever your goal is, or you want to be happy. You want to be able to climb a mountain for the first time in the past 10 years. Well, let's talk about how to get there. And that's kind of the same thing with all of this and everything you're trying to do in your podcast and what you've done with your life already and all the people that we know have done is we set that giant, amazing goal of what we wanted. And then we put these little intermediate goals and how to get there. And it's fun because you can, like you said, you sprint to that goal. You fight to get to that little intermediate goal, but you know, there should be other goals in there. It's the goal of rest and relaxation, or the goal of, you know, if you have kids, making your kid have passion like you, or making your kid learn something different, or making your wife happy. You know, just there's so many sub goals that not all of them go to the main goal, but in the end, they kind of do. They all work together. So, you know, I work so hard to those intermediate goals. But when I stop, when I succeed, then, you know, I'll take a minute and I'll relax. And I do that in every facet of my life. And that's what's kept me able to do everything is once I achieve that small area or that small sub goal, I stop and just breathe in the fresh air for a moment. And then I can keep going and I'll set a new goal after that to ultimately achieve what I want to do in life, which I'm finally getting to after 20 years.
Nice. So between all the careers you've had, being a firefighter, being a fighter pilot, a doctor, an ER doctor, it sounds like those are some of the most high pressure jobs that a person can have. So have you always been good at handling pressure, and have you gotten better over the years?
Yeah, you know, that's actually a great question. You had kind of mentioned that earlier when we spoke. And, you know, as I thought about it, you know, I think about it now, looking back with hindsight, and kind of looking back at life and how I got where I did. I think at some point, or in my early 20s, I really took inventory of who I was, what I was good at, and what I wasn't good at. And I had all these lofty goals of things to be and things that would be amazing. And I could live my life being passionate about my work and about my life. So for me, that's the best way to phrase the question is I understood early on that I handled pressure well. I'm not as smart as my friends or some other people that went to medical school, especially some of the guys that went to pilot training. I wasn't as, I would say, the most easy person to get along with. So that I see those people are so passionate, the Patch Adams types that can go be the best loving doctor in the world. But honestly, some of them have trouble in medical school. And I wasn't the most meticulous guy. So when I'm competing against the guys in pilot training, flying fighters, you know, there are guys 100% that were better than me. So my advice, kind of just looking back at now, I'm so glad I took inventory of my life early and went, look, I know I'm good at this and I'm a little less good at this and a little less good at this. So I kind of just wrote those things down and went, all right, I'm going to take advantage of that. So I know I'm a little less meticulous. So in pilot training, I had to pay a little more attention. I had to write that down. I said, I've got to be diligent about some of the details that I will often overlook. And as I'm sitting there in pilot training, I was able to at least compete and hang with the guys who were amazing and maybe fall a little bit in their coattails, but I was good enough to be their wingman. And they knew that I would never falter, you know, flying with them. I'd always be there and get the mission done. And when I went to, you know, doctor school, it was the same thing. I had to pay a little more attention to, you know, look to your inside and be a little more empathetic and spend a little, you know, a couple more moments with each patient to let them know that they'll be okay. But it's exactly that. When I took inventory of who I was back in the day, I saw those faults and I went, okay, we'll just work a little bit harder on them. But it paid off. I mean, it paid off to the point where I recognized as I kind of did each career that, you know, I wasn't the best at everything I ever did, but I was good. And I was certainly better than average. And I worked hard to make up for the things that I knew I wasn't as good at. And it worked for me. And so the pressure thing, that's the thing I actually leaned back on the entire time is it doesn't matter how much pressure you throw at me in the ER. When people are dying or in the air, when the bros on the ground are screaming for support, I can always just sit there and that was just my thing. I can hold back and I can be calm, cool, and get the job done for them, just like I do every day. So,
yeah, that makes sense. I think I'm similar in that regard. I think I've always been decent under pressure, but I have gotten better over the years. I think one of the things that's really helped me is being able to take care of myself in the moment. So like when we were flying Afghanistan, we'd be flying 6+ hour missions. And if you try to stay, you know, 100% for hours on end, you're going to crash. So every, you know, 30 minutes, every hour, I would, you know, take a swig of water and have a little bite to eat just to kind of mentally recharge so I didn't crash, you know, after a little bit.
Yeah. And I love that, you know, that mindset because it's exactly that. I try to voice that exact point. I try to stop in the middle of it all when the whole world is crashing down and I do this still. I stop, I walk around the corner, I take the biggest breath I can, breathe out. I mean, it is the fastest form of meditation you can have, but it does recharge you in those scenarios where that's all it takes. It may just be 10 seconds. And being in a high-powered business meeting, you know, with people who are just way beyond anything you've seen before, being in the same scenario in the fighter world or in the middle of a fire, your life, everyone else's life, everything's on the line. There's nothing wrong with 5 to 10 seconds. Deep breath, reset, recharge, and walk out there like nothing ever happened and always win. Because in our worlds, we have to win. There's no failure ever. So sometimes I agree with you. That's exactly what I need to just recharge. And it sometimes is just 5 to 10 seconds.
So do you have any stories of when you were a firefighter and you had to apply that?
Yeah, actually, you know, that was something I was very proud of. It's the same thing, like you said earlier, was, you know, I recognized early that I could handle pressure. And that's a good thing. And I remember, being in, you know, I've been in multiple fires and, you know, it's hot. It's all there is to it. It's just, there's no other way to describe it. You've never been in heat like that. It's so hot. And, You're in an attic somewhere. And I remember doing that. That's probably honestly where I think I learned that little mini meditation technique that I still talk about is exactly there. I remember being in an attic. I've got a hose. I remember my partner, I'm not going to lie, he was too obese to get through the into the attic. He was just too big and he couldn't get in the hole. And he was in front of me and he climbed back down the ladder and he's like, And, you know, in his defense, I mean, all of the gear you wear and you got your, you know, your SCBA, you got everything on there. So just everything together, just, it wasn't going to happen. So, you know, I crawled in there and I'm in there by myself in this attic and it's hot. and I'm just sitting there by myself and it's dark. You can't see anything. It's at night and the fire is totally in the attic. And I just start spraying and I just took a moment and honestly, I think I still remember that. And the nice thing with that SCBA is pumping air in you. And I just took a big breath and I just remember, I mean, I think it didn't matter if I closed my eyes, couldn't see anything anyway. The whole place is black and full of smoke. And I just took a moment. I can still remember that. And I just went, I got this. And, you know, honestly, that kept me. And like I said, that applies to the business world. It applies to medicine. It applies to flying fighters. It just takes a second to refocus, recharge, and get out there and kick some, you know.
Yeah. So going back to what you said about meditation, I started meditating a couple years ago when we were deployed and the days were pretty stressful. And meditation really changed my outlook because, you know, every morning I would do it and it was something I could kind of center myself on. And throughout the day, when I hit those times when there was high pressure or a lot going on or stress, I could kind of let that stuff go. Do you do any sort of meditation?
Yeah, I do a longer moments. For me, obviously, just in my world, it's just there's never enough time to sit there and really smell the roses when life is busy. My meditation, honestly, is I was out with another one of the fighter bros in Costa Rica, I think last year or the year before, don't know. And we are kite surfing over to Nicaragua, and we're just running this raging long time. I mean, it was miles out in the open ocean. I'm not that good a kite surfer. So that was entertaining as we're just getting rocked by big waves going up and down. And I, you know, that's one of those moments where honestly, I think probably 5 to 10 minutes, I just sat there and just, I don't even think I was truly aware of what was going on around me. Everything was somewhat stabilized, but it was just one of those where I just shut out the whole world and just took the breathing exercises, deep breaths, and just ignored everything. Those are kind of my moments. I'll sit there on a sunset and stare at it. And I think breathing is a huge part of that, where you can really reset everything. But that's my meditation. I'm not into the, you know, the Indian align the chakras thing for me because I'm just busy. But it doesn't mean you can't just open up your mind to nothing, to everything, to beauty, to everything you're seeing in front of you. And I think that has become something that I do use personally to not let the stress get ahead of me. And yeah, some of those moments are 5, 10, 15 minutes where I just shut out everything. And even I'll use that with exercise. Kind of like I said, kite surfing, it's the same thing just as part of my workout. Sometimes it's just a great way to clear your mind. And that's as much meditation as just sitting there with your legs crossed and closing your eyes and breathing. Sometimes you just got to take those deep breaths and clear everything out of your system.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. Being present and being able to soak in the amazing moments. I think too often, at least I think everybody does it, but I know I do it. Just thinking about the next thing and not taking time to really appreciate, you know, a beautiful sunset or flying an awesome sortie or something like that.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I mean, I think all of us, you know, like you said, like I was saying before, you know, add in the business world, medicine and everything else, you know, there's so much to just pause and think about. And we all have to do it, no matter what your job or world is. Even if that's just appreciating your family, you know, your kids, your wife, whatever it is that drives you and you're passionate about, you know, I think all of us can benefit from just taking a moment and thinking about something amazing, and it'll really clear you. It'll make you better. It'll make you continue on the things you really want to do in your business and your active life, your professional life. And it'll make you better at it. It'll drive you harder towards your goals, but we all got to stop and just smell the roses.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of busy work that kind of gets in the way of that, which kind of leads me back to something you said before, that you wake up and you have 20 things to do and you, prioritize them and you get the most important things done. At least here at Luke, we teach a lot of student pilots, and one of the things we try to teach them is how to prioritize. As you know, there's too many things in a sortie to do perfectly. You're not going to be able to do really anything perfectly, so you need to be able to drop off tasks in a concrete and efficient way. How do you prioritize tasks, and how do you kind of teach somebody that's not great at prioritizing to be a little bit better at that?
Amazing question. I can't say, like I said, I know better people than me to teach that. The only thing I can really do is kind of tell my perspective. I wish I was good at teaching that, because that is tough. I remember a moment on a sortie. You know, it's just like you're teaching your students at Luke. It's, you know, the beginning of flying is, you know, the whole aviate, navigate, communicate, and it's going to fall out in that order. And they're in the opposite order. It's just funny. I remember one of those sorties where, you know, we're launching missiles from a distance, and it was just practice sortie. And I remember turning in and the other group. So we go out after launching, we kind of go out, and I remember that just looking on our link that another couple of jets were down below me as I'm going out and diving down into them. And the next thing I know is that everybody's going into the same place. And I remember that here comes the comms that everybody's like, where is everybody? We're definitely in the same airspace. The other guys picked us up just in front of them as we're diving down before them. And I know that we were close. That's all there is to it. I remember that moment where I definitely lost the ability to communicate. I sure as hell didn't know where I was. And it was lucky I could even fly that airplane. I honestly just let it go and dive towards the earth, just because I recognized how close I was to the other guys and how bad it would have been. You know, I could have killed someone there. And we've all had that moment. And that's the ultimate in prioritization, is I can see that, hell, I needed to fly that airplane. But, you know, you just kind of freeze when it's getting to that point. So such an ultimate example of, you know, two fighters about to collide. But that's where I kind of go back to. When I go to my priority list, first of all, stop, smell the roses. It ain't that bad, right? You know, two fighters aren't about to collide, and you're not going to kill your best friends. So that's winning. So I look at that list, and you just kind of know, having to do what has to be done today. Yeah, I mark it. I spend time and money on my calendar, the most important thing to me in this world. And I go, these things have to be done today. That's it. And here's the order of those things. Stop. All right. Here's the things that need to be done the next couple of days. Let's order them. And then, you know, I look at my day and I go, I have 6 valuable hours to work here. The rest of the day is for me. I'm going to go mountain biking, or I'm going to go hang with my kids, or whatever it is I am going to prioritize. They get my priority. And then I am just going to spend that time cranking through that list. And so, you know, to answer your question, is that's my advice of how I do it. I can't say it's going to work for everyone, but I honestly spend a dedicated amount of time making that list, prioritizing that list, and then moving on. Because at the, you know, and on that list, most, you know, importantly is that my family, my free time, my physical activity, whatever it's going to be that day, my workout or mountain biking or kayaking, it's going to be something, but I'm going to make that a priority too. And I put that on that list every day. In fact, it mostly prioritizes over everything, because you're not going to achieve your goals if all you do is focus on your goals, because eventually you're just going to burn out.
Yeah. Yeah. I think clearing your head really makes you a better decision maker. At least around here, try to teach people to not get more than 90% saturated with making decisions. So as you get to like 90%, start dropping stuff off, because once you get to 100%, you don't have the ability to drop tasks anymore. It's just going to be dropped off randomly. And I think it's kind of an investment to prioritize. It seems like more work starting out, but it seems to pay off some dividends later quite a bit.
I just couldn't agree more. I mean, I remember my instructors teaching me that exact thing. And it's so hard to put in your mentality. It's so hard to go, what do you mean I have to drop stuff off? You know, but it does. And I think that's something that pilot training and RTU is, you know, training was so good at, was you do learn how to just drop out the most unimportant things. And honestly, some of the things are important, but they're less important than others. And you just learn to do that. And I think that's part of our training. But it's so valuable, and it applies to everything else you and I do and all the other guys you interview, is you learn that, man, you already know that list. You know its priority. And in a true dangerous situation or high stress situation, you know the things you got to get rid of. And if you don't know it, then you think about it before you get into that situation and know the answer. Like you're saying, you teach people to know what to get rid of, what to jettison prior to the situation, so that they know when they get into the situation where it's just too task saturating, I'm ejecting this thought and this mindset and this process because it just isn't important in this setting. So it's a value. What you're teaching your students is what is applicable to every part of the rest of our lives. And that's amazing, because it makes doing other things like emergency medicine so much easier. I very much value my training as a fighter pilot, because it has made me a 10 times better ER doctor than I would have ever been otherwise. And honestly, I go back into a fire once in a while and I'm a better firefighter, because I know that I've thought through the process and I know what is the most important thing to do, and I'm going to stick to that and get it done.
Yeah, I think pilot training is one of the big success stories, being able to take a guy off the street and turn him into a professional aviator in just a couple of years is pretty cool. But yeah, those close passes, they're no joke. You know, as you know, we're flying usually a couple miles apart. We're flying a couple miles high, so you don't get a chance to see that closure. But when you have 1,000 knots of closure just a couple feet, you know, a couple dozen feet away, that is it's almost incomprehensible how fast you're moving. Do you have any other, you know, stories of close calls when you're flying or when you're in combat?
I don't know. I don't know. You have so many close moments. It just is what it is. It's not always, you know, it's not always the close pass. It's sometimes that you just didn't know that something bad was going on. It's something to reflect upon, that when you don't even know how close you are to another airplane, that's scary. When you see it, when you're, you know, trying to do a close set and gun somebody, you remember. I mean, every once in a while, you may break the bubble. You get too close. I mean, that's fear. That's direct fear, because you know it's coming. But what's worse, I don't know, is that moment of the unknown, where even when you're up there and we're, you know, looking at Link and we can see each other, sort of, it drops out for a second, or you're doing a no Link mission where, you know, you have to rely on that visual cues. And every once in a while, you got to turn away from the other guy and you don't know. I mean, you and I both know that there's a feeling in there that's just, it's rough. It's tough to really get to know. It's tough to accept. But the fact is all the guys who, you know, have done what we've done, you just learn to accept it. You got to trust each other, and you got to know that all of us are going to communicate and do the right thing, because it is our lives on the line. And That's freaky, but I mean, it's value for the rest of our lives. For the rest of our lives, we always know we can trust other people. It's amazing to me because I have a group of friends that are unbelievable in my life, and I don't think I would have had that without the experience of pilot training. All my friends aren't fighter pilots in my core group of friends, but I trust them because I learned to trust other people from pilot training. And that's so valuable to me because, you know, tomorrow I'm in the Middle East and a week from now we're running up Kilimanjaro. And these are the same guys I go everywhere with, all around the world, all the time. We invest in each other's businesses. We spend money with each other all the time. If any one of them asked me for $50,000 right now, it would be wired within seconds. No questions asked. I would never even ask why. But that level of trust is so amazing. And I learned that in pilot training because my life depended on it. And that's such an amazing feeling. And now I still live that life with some of the guys in my group are fighter pilots and some of them aren't, but we still trust each other with everything. We do some cool stuff because of that.
Yeah. Having that band of brothers mentality is one of the cool things I think about being a fighter pilot. It's almost like being on a sports team, but you get to be on it for 10, 20 years. So it's pretty cool. So I know you said you're traveling, you're packing today. Where are you heading in the Middle East?
As long as this isn't released today, it's Jordan. Going to the military has sent me there for a little bit, doing some consulting with a few others, doing trauma consulting with the Jordanians. So very cool. That's part of the partnership to help them see some of the stuff we've learned in Afghanistan and Iraq. The medicine we do is unbelievable. Kind of to really share that. So when I was in medical school, obviously I was flying fighters. So I got deployed for a 5-6 monther in Iraq flying fighters, but I was a third year medical student. And took a lot of coordination, let's just say, with my medical school to allow that to happen. I did some research while I was there, just, you know, while we're sitting alert. I would sit on the computer and do medical research, just putting numbers in spreadsheets and kind of doing a bunch of trauma medical research so that they would give me credit so I could continue medical school while I was deployed. And then every morning after I finished my mission, I would debrief intel every morning and I would go over to the hospital and learn, just hang out as a medical student. So I got to learn so many amazing things and see about what the real world was like in Iraq, where we're seeing IED blasts and just tons of patients coming in at once from mass casualties. And I got to see real medicine. Pretty amazing stuff. But one of the most amazing parts of it is not only at the same time I was doing research on the side to help make trauma medicine better so that the next group of warfighters could be healthier and could be saved better so we could learn from it. And the military does an amazing job of that. We fight so hard to be better at medicine so we can protect our bros on the ground and even the guys in the air. Just if they get hurt, we can save them. And we've shown throughout the past century just an exponential rise in the amount of people that survive because of that research and that work. And it's amazing because then I do a ton of trauma as an ER doctor. Now I work at one place in particular that does pretty significant trauma. And I value everything I learned from the military and I use it. And I use it on all of us who get crushed in car accidents and, you know, hit by cars and unfortunately shot by bad people and robberies and all the horrible things I see every day. But the fact is, I pride myself in just everything I've learned from the military and being in those horrible situations. But the fact is I value and I am good at what I do because of that time, you know, spent overseas learning real trauma medicine, and I apply it every day. And that's actually what we're doing overseas this week is we're helping our partners out there be better at that and sharing our information that we've learned from the wars to make them better at it so that they can help their people and honestly ours, because they're our allies and they'll be taking care of us in some of the, you know, future conflicts that we'll see.
Yeah, don't worry. This won't be released for a couple of weeks. You don't have to worry about that.
Perfect.
But I am curious about some of the lessons learned and some of the new technology. When we were at deployed a couple of weeks in, there's an IED on base, and they detonated near a group of people, and unfortunately, four people passed away. But the doctors were able to save 16 other people. So can you talk about some of those lessons learned and like what excites you about the future of emergency medicine?
Oh, yeah. Great question. So the first time you see, you know, I had seen in my EMS days, I had seen some mass casualties. I certainly went to, you know, a few shootings here and there and a lot of car accidents and everything else. But until you see 50 patients come at once, I've never seen anything like it. And it's just, it's something I see, even in the civilian side as well, the military side, there is a passion that is unbelievable. You see it, and I saw it in the fire and EMS world too. It was just unreal to see what people are willing to do when something like that happens. You see everyone's eyes light up because the reason they went into these fields is to save people. And the same is about being a fighter pilot. You didn't just go into it because you loved flying. We love flying. You and I both know that. But we love fear. We love helping people. And our way of helping people is, you know, making bad people go away. It's the same in medicine. And when you see that passion in someone's eyes when something horrible happens, you know that they're there because they have been living for this moment to save those people. And it's just so cool to see. And I see that in all of my careers, which is why I do those careers, is because I love that passion. And when you see that and you combine it with science, like the military spends just insane amounts of money, and rightfully so, in analyzing what we do in Iraq and Afghanistan, just like we did in Vietnam, just like we did in World War II and Korea, we analyze what we did so that we can see what we did right and what we did wrong. And the military is absolutely on the cutting edge of medicine, in trauma medicine especially, because of that. And a lot of the things I've learned and did learn in Iraq and did learn on, you know, numerous other trainings and everything I've done on the medical side of the military, I apply every day in my world as an ER doctor, because I feel like I'm on the cutting edge because I've been getting that training. I stay on it and I use it and I teach my partners. Absolutely. These are the things we need to do because it matters. And we all want to be good at what we do, because just like you said, saving 16 people is amazing. And what a feeling. And that's why we all got into this job. And how we do that is paying attention to the science, especially that learned and paid for by blood in the military. But it's going to save us when, you know, a drive-by shooting happens and we're in the wrong place, or a drunk driver hits us or our family. All of that from the military gets applied in the civilian world. And I love doing that. I love being on the forefront of that and making sure the people I work with know, because we're there to save us. And so it's pretty cool.
So it might go over my head, but what are some of the new technologies? Is it like new blood clotting stuff that doesn't burn you? Is it stuff like that?
Yeah, good question. Yeah, I try not to go too in depth in it, but transfusion, that's a great example. We used to do things differently, where we would give these kind of blood products, just the regular blood cells. And then the military learned, and the fact is in the civilian world, you may have the occasional mass casualty every few years, and it's always at different, you know, hospitals, because America is a big place, and we still use the worldwide stuff. It just doesn't happen. But seeing groups of 50 patients or 20 patients come in at once, there's just nothing like that except in the war zones. And we learned, just honestly, giving blood products in a certain order and a certain amount, we were doing it wrong, because when we compared that, we tried it one way and we just gave one type of blood product. And then we tried another way where we give all of the blood products at once. And we just compared and saw who survived. And the fact is we were doing it wrong before. And it's just unreal that you apply that in the civilian world. Let's just say two cars collide and there's five people in each and one hospital knows how to do it right. Then, you know, two or three of those people who are going to die get to live and they get to go back to their families, all because of what we've learned in Iraq, just because we changed how we give those blood products and we keep people alive. Sorry, I'm kind of going off on a tangent.
Oh, you know, this is great.
While I was a med student, this was one of the coolest things I ever saw in a bad way, unfortunately, but it made me a better person and it made me a better doctor. Now is, again, I'm a med student and I'm going around in Balad in central Iraq. And, you know, I would, like I said, I'd spend all night long flying, you know, those 8 hour, 6 to 8 hour missions. You remember that? You debrief intel, you go to the hospital and it's sit. And one day I'm there in the morning after flying and, you know, there's another mass casualty, you know, IED blast, and there's a guy come in and he had been hit by, you know, big blasts. All there is to it, you know, both legs, one arm, and the other arm was shredded. It's just everything was in pieces and he was trying to survive. And what I had learned just in medical school about how we do things, they had kind of mentioned how to do transfusions. And I watched the trauma surgeon there, who's a good friend of mine, and they all took care of me. And I went through it from the ER to the radiology, getting the CT scans to the OR. And I helped everyone, i.e. I sat in the corner and watched. But I can't imagine not having been through this experience, because seeing all those people trying so hard to keep this guy alive, using the most advanced and cutting edge medicine, trying to help him. And they actually gave him more blood products than anyone I have ever heard of, ever, just because the chance of survival was so slim, it didn't matter. It was save him no matter what. And the trauma surgeon is a smart guy. You know, they pay very close attention to how much blood they have, because there's going to be more people coming in with injuries. And he's, you know, and it was funny because we know, hey, there's a point where you should just stop because you got to save it for the next guy. He said, damn it, no way. And he just kept going, said, we'll get more blood. And they put out a base wide thing for his type of blood and said, hey, I need everybody on base that is available, that has this blood type. If you're available, please come donate. And they kept going. They just kept going in that OR. And for hours, they tried to save him. Ultimately, you know, it was just too much. But in the end, all the blood is gone. They've used everything in the hospital, everything in Iraq, pretty much. And you walked out the door and there were 300 or 400 people standing in a line waiting to donate. Wow. So, you know, there's science, but there's also passion. There's love for each other. There's everything that you dream about in this world is something you'll see there. And I'm never going to see that again. I'm going to never see something that amazing with those 300 or 400 people sitting there going, I'm answering the call right now. And we refilled our blood supply like that. It's just, that one guy was worth it. And so there's nothing like that.
Wow. That's amazing. That's how I feel, I guess, being in the Air Force and being around other fighter pilots, is it's just incredible to be around other awesome people. And then being deployed, I feel like that takes it to another level, because everybody on the base is working for a similar cause. And if you need something, everybody is more than willing to help you out. So it's just a kind of an awe-inspiring feeling.
It's what we did this for. We wanted it to be a part of that team. But that's what we get in the fighter world. And, you know, just in the combatant world, it's just, we're doing it for each other. And it's a beautiful thing that you just won't get anywhere else.
So how is the transition between that to now you are, correct me if I'm wrong, a business owner, you own a wellness and physical therapy clinic. How is the transition between what you were doing before to that been?
It's great. I don't know if you've kind of gathered it, but I'm a bit passionate. So I'm passionate about whatever I do. I love nutrition. I've always been into that from the beginning. You know, I did my master's while I was flying jets, just because, like I told you, when I was a fireman, I needed something more. I needed to learn more. I needed to use my time efficiently, because life's too short to just do one thing. There's just, and I don't just say work. I say that both in, you know, in lifestyle and relaxation and all the other things. It's just, I wanted to learn more and do more. And that's why I did that. So the whole point is carry that passion into everything you do and you'll be all right. And if you're not passionate about it, then it's time to find something else to do. It's going to take some more work, but that's life. It's why fighter pilots do what they do. Is you better damn well be passionate about it or you're in the wrong business. And hopefully the bros at Luke and then pilot training centers are, you know, that's the whole point, is they see the guys who they're just not doing it because they love it. They're doing it because they want to be a politician or whatever silly reason, and get them the hell out of there. And it's the same in everything else in life, is love what you're doing or move on.
I agree. The why is extremely important for what people are doing, I guess. Well, Jay, I really appreciate your time. I know you have some packing to do to go to the Middle East. So I wish you the best and stay safe. But I do appreciate you doing this podcast.
No worries, man. Anytime. Like you said, there's a bunch of guys like us who are sitting there going, well, can I do this? Or is this the right thing to do? And it's cool that you're doing the podcast to give them some insight to people like us. Like I said, you know, you've interviewed some pretty amazing people, and I'm certainly on the lower end of that list. So I'm glad you filled it in with me, but we can share how amazing what we do with others. And if that's the right thing for them, awesome, but damn well be passionate about it.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Professionals Playbook. I'm Justin Lee. If you like what you heard, 1, writing a review, and 2, sharing your favorite episode on social media will help out a lot. If you want to ask me a question, my email is justin@professionalsplaybook.com. I'll see you guys in 2 weeks.